I'm Laura Vinroot-Poole. For over 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store in Charlotte, North Carolina. On this podcast, we unlock the stories of people's lives through the stories of what they wore. These aren't conversations about fashion. These are conversations about people.
Everybody wants to know her name.
Hamlin O'Kelly has been one of my best friends for over 30 years, and I couldn't pass up the opportunity to offer you a window into Southern men's style through Hamlin's hilarious and sharp-witted lens. I hope you'll enjoy this crash course on all things Southern. Hamlin O'Kelly.
Laura Vinroot-Poole.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
How do we know each other? Where did we meet?
Well, we met in the lower right dining hall of a little school called Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts, when your mother asked me where the cream was for her coffee. And I said,
how did you know where the cream was?
Well, because I went to school there, as did you. We did not know each other at the time. It was Parents Weekend.
The first year we were there, Parents Weekend, like in October or something.
It's a perfect New England, like Robert Frost poem day.
Yeah, I remember it, actually.
Blue sky, leaves beautiful. Were orange, brown, you know. Yellow, and your mom walked by and said, son, and she said, son, and I thought, okay, she's not from New England. She said, son, is there cream over there? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, oh, my gosh, where are you from? You just said, yes, ma'am. We're from Charlotte. Come meet my daughter. Yeah, that never works. And so we met, and there you go. We've been friends literally ever since. 31 years.
And we hadn't met before then?
We hadn't met before then because, as you well know, our school was rather large.
Right.
We had 1,200-plus students, and we were divided into what are called clusters for your listening audience, which is designed to make a big school seem smaller. And you were in Pine Knoll.
Yeah, Pine Knoll.
And I was West Quad North, which are geographically far apart. And so, no, we had not met until then.
We were fast friends. I mean, it was love at first sight.
Well, I think it was kind of like, oh, great. Who's this guy? And I was like, who's this girl? Okay, well, at least she's from Charlotte. And, you know, I'm from Beaufort, South Carolina, fellow traveler, southerner in the wilds of New England together. And so that was, I think, the initial bond was, you know, we speak some of the same language.
Speaking of fashion, too, I do remember that first Parents Weekend when my parents got there. I think it was October, right?
It was the third weekend in October every year.
So we'd been there a month and a half. And I felt so relieved that my parents were there. And the first thing I did when we got there was go shopping. There was a Ralph Lauren outlet outside of Andover. And I wanted to go there immediately because I felt so out of place with all of these, you know, kids from Upper East Side of Manhattan and Greenwich, Connecticut. And I was like, I really needed some tweed and some Black Watch plaid and some cable knit sweaters. And so that honestly was the very first thing we did when my parents got there, because I was like, oh my God, I'm not prepared for this.
So my parents, that's funny. I had no idea that that's what y'all did, because we got
did the same thing.
We got in the rental car and drove to Freeport.
Did you
to L.L. Bean? Yes, we drove to L.L. Bean because my parents,
so funny.
So the Beaufort, South Carolina in 1972 when I was born had three stores, but we always drove to Charleston or Savannah to shop.
And where would you shop? What was the...
Well, in Charleston, it was Jack Krawcheck's. I mean, that was for men. That was the be-all, end-all for men. And then my mother would go to Elza's, and I mean, that was it for women. And then everybody for shoes went to Bob Ellis. I mean, that's kind of you've heard this story before. So that's,
I lived that story.
You lived that story. So I arrived at Andover with clothes from Bob Ellis. I mean, shoes from Bob Ellis and pants and sweaters and everything from Jack Krawcheck. And it actually was, when you said Black Watch, I was like, oh, I kind of had those pants before I showed up, which is a very sort of mainline Southern, you know, what people outside of the South would call preppy look.
Yeah. Stores. I mean, I think I had pink Azads and...
Sure. Lots of pink and green. Yeah. But we got in the car and drove to Freeport.
That's so funny.
I mean, that was that very weekend. And I
Did y'all spend the night? How long?
No,
did it
Freeport's
take?
Close.
Okay.
Kittery, Maine was where there were tons of outlets, and then Freeport is not that far.
God, that's funny. And what did you get?
You
saw duh,
me.
The duck boots.
Well, duck. I already had duck boots. Those we already had.
I had those too. Yeah, that was the one thing I was prepared for New England with.
One of the people who got me to apply to Andover is like, well, your clothes are all wrong. You need this, this, and this. So she advised we needed the duck boots.
Yeah.
So the duck boots, but I bought.
Which are like really not that. Great, because they're freezing.
They're freezing and they slip after a while.
Yeah,
nice
exactly.
And
they're
snow.
Not really good for snow. But you know the coolest thing about L.L. Bean is, do you know you can return things that fall apart from L.L. Bean for the rest of your life? They have
a
lifetime.
If I found those boots, I could take them back tomorrow. We all had them. There were these navy sweaters with these two white dots.
Oh God, I love those.
And I
wish I had yours. You wore it all the time.
I don't know where it is.
Had my brothers. I stole my brothers.
Of course you did. And then that, but I didn't buy this. And then about 2 weeks later, I bought an Irish fisherman sweater from Threads of Ireland.
Trust me, I know that sweater.
In Andover.
Because you wore it literally every day.
I think every day.
And through college.
Through college. I still have it. My eldest daughter wears it now.
I would steal that thing if I saw it. I would swipe it in a second.
I've got it, and it's the best. It's the warmest thing I still own. It still fits, surprisingly.
And it's weirdly soft.
It's weirdly soft, and if I could find, I had you might remember this, a red and white striped turtleneck that I kind of was known for. I mean, what wore the hell out of that?
Was that L.L. Bean?
That was from the Brooks Brothers on Newberry Street in Boston.
Oh, my God.
Because Brooks Brothers was a revelation because we didn't have, Brooks Brothers was not a Southern store back then. I mean, if you went
to it was such a good store.
Still is.
But it was really good in the day.
Dear listener, if you could see me now, everything on my back is from the Brooks Brothers in Charleston or the Brooks Brothers outlet in North Charleston.
Oh, I love it.
I mean, seriously.
And then what about the Andover shop? Was a great shop.
I had a charge account. What were my parents thinking?
Awesome.
They're like, well, in case you need any clothes, here's your charge account. And it's still in existence. And it's the Andover shop is
it's a fabulous
store. It's a great store.
Yeah.
And they don't just sell things that are with the colors of our alma mater. It's more than blue and black.
I would love to go there now and shop. One of the biggest insults of my life, but also one of the biggest compliments of my life, was at Andover. Our friend James McLean called me a bitch in boys' clothes.
Oh, that sounds just like young Master
and
McLean.
I was so taken aback. Well, I mean, first, to be called a bitch was really, but the boys' clothes part, I didn't understand it for a second, but I'd been borrowing my brother's clothes my whole life. I have an older brother. And then my boyfriend's clothes. And that's sort of my real comfort zone is like boys, like painter's pants and navy Levi's cords. Duh, love.
Would you like to come
raid your closet? Raid
the drawer.
I don't think it would. I don't think your clothes would fit me, but now I really like go with it. I'm like, yeah, that is actually my style. That's what I love. But at the moment, it
I had no idea
me.
James called
James
me
McLean,
it,
yeah.
James, if you're listening, it doesn't surprise me that you said that because it sounds just like something
it was true.
You would have said. Yeah,
it was on point. So, Hamlin, you're from Beaufort, South Carolina.
Born and reared.
Not Beaufort, North Carolina.
Not Beaufort, but Beaufort. Both named for the Duke of Beaufort, but South Carolina with
doesn't
its...
Doesn't know how to pronounce things.
No, it's truly an American story. We had so many French Huguenot immigrants in the Low Country that to fit in, they anglicized everything. So,
oh, how interesting.
So that's why there's a street in Charleston that's Legree Street and not Laguerre, because if you were in France, it'd be Laguerre.
Right.
But it's Legree. Everything is anglicized.
That's
and
so funny.
Beaufort was the correct British pronunciation, but it's Beaufort, a little nasally sounding. But that, born and reared, was the second or third child to be delivered by an actual OBGYN. That's how
really?
Small Beaufort was in 1972. And it was the perfect place to grow up.
Yeah. And so, what was your uniform as a child?
Well, which stage of childhood? Because there's we had, I mean.
But most of the time it was summer there.
It was hot. It's still hot. I mean, in the summer it was camp shorts that had the little zipper on the left
and
side.
And the little like hook on
and
it,
and a hook
right?
So you could attach your Swiss Army
what
knife.
Did you, or a rabbit's foot.
Or if you were lucky, Laura. And that and t-shirts. And then if
what
you
kind
were,
of t-shirts?
You know, just really probably awesome ones with like Mickey Mouse on them.
Right.
Or that said Star Wars.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
I had an awesome one that said Coke, like for Coca-Cola, Coke adds life to everything nice.
Of course it, yeah. Of course
does,
you had
because it does.
Because it does. We had those sweet matching Lacoste shorts and shirts, like you'd have blue shorts and a blue shirt.
Yes.
And then if you were really cool and your parents loved you a lot, you got to wear, well, that was later, but you got to go to the department stores like Belk's and buy Garanimals.
Really?
If you were really cool.
And I thought that was like an 80s thing.
I thought that was a 70s thing.
I don't know.
We never got to wear them because my mother thought they were tacky. So it didn't matter. It didn't matter. But I really wanted to, like, you put your lion with your lion and your zebra with your zebra. Nobody remembers Garanimals.
No, I remember it, but I remember I would never put that. I would never wear that. I can't. You were. That was not something you would wear.
We weren't allowed to wear it. I thought it was cool. there was Benji Burris, if you're listening, you got to wear Garanimals.
I love it.
You were, and you showed us the lions. It was really cool.
Well,
and then
my mother would say that's ticky tacky.
Yeah, so we wore, and a lot of, I mean, we were the originators of the Birdwell bathing suits.
For sure.
Still wear them today.
Navy,
red, green, yeah. And then
did you have like a whole sleeve of them?
Two or three, and just wore them nonstop. And that's back when the zippers were Velcro, and then they would get really nubby by the end and not work, so you'd be a little flashy.
But living in Beaufort, I mean, did you sweat in those? Because they don't breathe. I mean,
no, because you weren't wearing a shirt. That's all you had. You had nothing.
That's all you wore. Okay.
That's all you wore. I mean, we were the color of betel nuts. I mean, we were brown. I mean, I'm blonde haired and blue eyed. I'm sure skin cancer is in my future because we were. We were outside all the time. We were in the river, as we say, being in the boat or on the beach or in the pool. We were tan. My hair was green from the chlorine in the pool, and my nose bled from the skin peeling off of it. I mean, that would be from May to October.
Absolutely.
And then another thing, we would have to go, as I said, to Charleston to get fitted for what we called church clothes.
Yes, church clothes.
You know, khakis and blazers.
Yeah.
And the tweed, the herringbone tweed blazer that you could wear in the winter.
Right.
And then we always were made to wear itchy wool pants. I don't know why they did that to boys.
Like gray?
Gray wool pants that were itchy.
Did you ever have
wool shorts. We wore those a lot.
Really?
With
long socks?
When we were really little.
And what kind of shoes? Like penny loafers?
Buster Brown shoes or black shoes, but I mean that's Buster Brown was the brand.
And then did you? That's when you started with like LL Bean with blue. Was it Bluchers or
Bluchers?
Those were the best.
Those were the best. I mean, and Bluchers, and then they're Bluchers Bastard Children Camp Mocs. Still wear them, and I get made fun of.
And Mark McNary makes the best new version of them.
There you go.
They're really good.
So I was at Whole Foods in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, not too long ago, and this person, whom you know but whom shall remain nameless, yelled at me across the way, "Oh my God, are you wearing Camp Mocs? What is it, 1986? Well, yeah.
Like, I wish it were.
Maybe not. But, you know, they never go out of style.
No, they're so good. Tell me about your dad's style growing up. Did you learn about style from your dad, or was it more just you had to do things because your mom told you you had to wear, this is what, I mean, you're three boys.
So, dear listener, I'm one of three boys. I'm
the eldest.
I'm the eldest. My brothers and I fall into every birth order pattern. I mean, we are like, if you read one of those books about birth order, they could put me, Arthur, my middle brother, and Wade, my youngest brother, and we would fit. But so my father is an attorney. Mm. He went to the Citadel, and he was in the United States Marine Corps.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, it wasn't so much that it's uniforms. This is the uniform of the day. This is what we wear.
Yeah.
He was always dressed for work. I mean, you know, there was no such thing as casual Friday.
No. And my dad's almost 80. He still wears a full suit
at the
office at 7.
So going back to how we started this conversation, going to look at Andover, you go and you tour.
Right.
And we arrived on a January day. It was right after their winter break. It was snowy. It was super cold. And Dad is wearing a pinstripe suit that is a three-piece suit. He's got the vest on because it was cold. Well, it was cold. And then he's got a huge overcoat on and a muffler and gloves and a wool hat. I mean, he looked like something out in, you know, the 50s because, you know, men's styles.
Yeah.
We don't change as much as y'all do.
No, you don't.
We really don't. And then I was in my navy blazer and khaki pants, and we got out of the car, and Dad's like, "Fix your tie, boy," because it had gotten crooked in the car with the seatbelt, and I was like, you know, looking in the mirror, fixing the tie, and he's like, "I can't believe you don't have a top coat." That's because that's what he and you're not wearing any cover, which is the Navy term for a hat, you know.
So really,
yeah, because the Marine Corps still uses. I mean, Marines are hardcore. I mean, you know, Navy people are hardcore.
Yeah, my grandfather and my uncle.
They still use the terms. It's like, you know, hit the deck.
Yeah.
Where's the head? Get out of the galley. You know, where's your cover? So we got out of the car that day, and the image, it was a bluebird day in terms of the sky, but it was super cold. Uh-huh. Breath is coming out. I'm adjusting my tie in, and he makes the comment about cover. So to answer your question, Dad always wore the same thing every day, but it depended on the season. Like, as soon as Easter came around, here comes the seersucker.
Right.
Here comes the poplin suits.
And go to hell pants. Explain what go to hell pants
Dad, no, my father would never.
Mine wouldn't either, but my brother did.
So go to hell pants, I love them. It's pants that when you put them on, you're basically telling the world you go to hell because they can be made out of 50,000 different types of mattress patches.
Yeah, patches.
Or you went to the Lilly Pulitzer store in Savannah and got them.
Right.
I mean, you know, things like that.
I love it.
My dad would never have worn that.
It's too crazy.
Yeah, super conservative. But my dad also still, he doesn't wear a tie anymore, but he still flies in a blazer.
Oh, my dad does too. Are you kidding?
Well, so do I. To be honest, I mean, my children are always laughing. They're like, "Hurry up, Dad," because I'm putting the blazer in the overhead, thing next to the lady in her Juicy Couture sweatsuit.
Her pajamas. What? People wear full-on pajamas now.
And snuggies and to the grocery store.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's the most unattractive thing about
bizarre
current American society.
I agree.
Don't know what happened.
I don't either, actually.
So a year ago, about in the winter, I'd gone to do something. Then I get a call from my amazing bride, Mary Perrin. Can you run by the grocery store? I run by the grocery store. There are three College of Charleston students walking through the Harris Teeter on East Bay Street in snuggies.
And snuggies are like the whole, like they're like a sleeping bag, right?
Yeah, but they're wearing them as their coats. And then they've got their flannel pajama bottoms and basically scuffs on. I mean, it's 11:30 in the morning. And I know they sleep later than we do, but come on, people. You're wearing snuggies in the grocery store. And it's still, I mean, in Charleston, people still kind of dress a little bit. I mean, not everything is athleisure wear and casual.
Yeah.
You know, shorts and t-shirts all the time.
No, I think people in Charlotte, people in the South dress.
And I think it might be a holdover from a time when nobody had anything, so you had to look good.
You were making dresses out of your curtains, you mean?
No, not quite, Scarlett. But if you don't have anything and all you've got left is your manners and, you know, the family home that's been there five generations, you still gotta look good and presentable, even though you can't
look like somebody,
even though you can't paint the house, you know. You can still look like somebody.
Your wife Mary Perrin, I sold her a Lilly Pulitzer dress for your rehearsal dinner
in Phillips Place
and stuck a matching Lilly tie in the bag for you to wear.
You wouldn't let me pay for it either.
Do you hate me for that when you look at pictures, or do you love me?
No, I love it. I mean, the dress, Mary Perrin still has the dress. And it's funny you mentioned the tie because it hangs on the little tie rack in my closet. And I see it every day. I don't wear it every day. But I do wear it in the summer with like a navy blazer.
I love it. I love a Lilly tie.
Lilly is still pretty.
Like, it's Charleston, pretty cool.
Charleston's a pretty
strong,
hot Lilly market. Yeah, yeah.
Well, tell me about Southern style. Like, what do you think Southern style is?
Oh, that's hard because there's so many. I think that's an unfair statement to say Southern style, because people outside of the South assumes we're some sort of monolith, that everybody looks like an episode of Matlock or Andy Griffith or Designing Women. But I mean, it used to be, and I don't think it's that as much anymore because of the internet and everybody on social media, but people in Charleston did not look like people in Columbia, and people in Columbia didn't look like people in Charlotte. And
agreed.
So there was sort of a regionalism about what people wore. But I think we're better dressed than the rest of the country.
I do too.
I mean, don't tell anybody. I think we care.
Yeah.
And not everybody wears all black.
Well, I was going to say, I think we're really not afraid of color. But more than that, I've always thought we're not afraid of standing out. We're not afraid of being seen because we're very sure about who we are. And I think that that's unusual.
I mean, I look at old pictures that hang on like my parents' wall, and you see pictures of like great grandparents, and they look pretty darn good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they were on the pages of whatever fashion magazines were in vogue at the time, but I mean, ooh, just realize that pun I just made there. But you know, people looked good, but also the things have changed because people used to put on coats and ties every morning to go walk the farm or to do, you know, sweaty stuff, but they were still you know, kind of decked out. And
what does Southern style mean for men, and what are some of the quintessential kind of Southern pieces for men?
Well, we still are stereotypical in the sense that, I mean, come Easter, the seersucker is out.
And you love your seersucker.
Because it's flipping hot.
I love it, but also it doesn't wrinkle.
It doesn't wrinkle, and it's hot.
And you know the biggest misconception is linen. They think we love linen. I hate linen.
Linen wrinkles.
People in the South do actually don't like linen.
I like linen shirts.
I like linen sheets.
duh. But I like linen shirt, short sleeve linen shirts in the summer when it's really hot if you have to go to something.
Okay.
Like the standard Charleston party scene, a button down shirt and khakis and some shoes.
Alligator belt.
White bucks. I love my white bucks.
Yeah, my husband does too.
So the listeners out there who might not know what white bucks are, they're white shoes with new buck suede mm-hmm. on them. And they were made popular in the 1920s by bankers in New York City and lawyers in Philadelphia. And then you would wear them all summer. And up there, it would be Memorial Day to Labor Day. Uh-huh. Here, it's Easter to Labor Day.
Right.
And at the end of the summer, they would be sort of dingy and gray. And you'd have to get out this block and rub. It's like a pumice stone.
Right.
But you rub your bucks. Huh. And, of course, my wife gave me one of those. Because you have to rub them. So it gets the dinginess off of them. But I wear mine like a dog, those shoes.
So you have the same rule as white shoes, which, by the way, I do not wear white shoes ever. But you're only allowed to wear between Easter and Labor Day.
That's what my dad said.
So, yeah. You know, yeah. And then
seersucker, too. You can't wear that. Come Labor Day, you got to put away, which is stupid.
Because it's still hot. It's hot. It's hotter than ever, actually.
September's
and then the other thing for so women is velvet in the South, that you only wear velvet between Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day.
Lent. You got to put it away by Lent, I guess. I mean, I don't know. But so seersucker is a big thing. White bucks. Tucking your shirt in. I mean, that sounds really sort of pedestrian, but that's sort of a Southern thing, and now it's going away because
untuck it. Is that your worst nightmare?
Everyone's wearing their untuck it shirts and their skinny jeans, and it's
every time
changed.
I hear that commercial, I'm like, why would you even? What does that mean? Why are you saying the perfect untucked shirt? I don't understand.
Tuck your shirt in, dude.
Yeah, just do.
Well, and I think that's a holdover from my father's military. You know,
you
don't just tuck your shirt in, you tuck it in the right way and
exactly.
do the crease along the side. So you've got the perfect tuck and, you know, and that's, he also had the Citadel training for that too.
I know you make your bed the same way too, don't you?
Yeah. And the Citadel, of course, dear listener, is the Military College of South Carolina. It was founded in the 1840s to sort of be the Southern antidote to West Point.
Right. Where my grandfather went.
Yeah. There you go. But it's still, I mean, I live two blocks from the Citadel, and it's, you know, we hear the bugles in the morning and tap and revelry in the morning and taps at night.
And that's so funny. But are you awake before it?
Yes. Often.
You're an early riser.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing about Southern women?
Oh, dear God. Well, you know, everybody thinks the South is that Southern women are these demure, quiet little things. Ha. The South is the only matriarchal part of the country.
Yeah.
I mean, women run everything in the South.
Yes.
Y'all let
whether up, you know it or not.
Whether you know it or not. I mean, and I think my favorite thing about Southern women is every woman in my family and every Southern woman I've known has been a steel fist and a velvet glove. I mean, just crushes it. But you don't even know you're being destroyed or crushed or directed or being led a certain way. Southern women are resilient beyond belief
mm-hmm.
and always have been. But really just y'all run our lives.
We do.
You do. You do. And I'm growing up in a household with three boys. My poor mother was much beleaguered because she was the only, you know, XX chromosome in the house. But things have changed genetically because I have two girls. My brother Arthur has two girls. My brother Wade has two girls.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. Oh, yeah. And so we are all surrounded.
That's so funny.
By women. It's exhausting. I had no idea all the drama that comes along with rearing girls.
Well, and Mary Perrin's one of three girls.
My wife is one of three girls.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
And so with fashion with your girls, I mean, was that a new, did you have a lot to learn when they were born? And what did they wear?
I mean, I thought all we had to do is buy some smock dresses, and that's it. And, you know, Feltman Brothers
right.
day gowns, which are, you know, the same day gowns that you and I were put in when we were little. But I had no clue. No clue.
Do you know my Feltman? I have to tell you this, Hamlin. My Feltman Brothers day gowns, I had them on my Madame Alexander baby dolls. Pussycat was one of them, and Victoria was the other. And so after I wore them, I put them on my dolls. And then when I had Fifi, I had to take them off my dolls to put them on my child.
I hope they went through the washing machine at
least. They did, okay. Yes, and they were pressed and everything, but they were perfect.
So my children wore mine, and they wore Mary Pierron's.
Yeah.
And because they...
Isn't that funny?
They wear like pig iron. I mean, they're tough as nails. I mean, they really do. So I had no clue. And my mother is a big shopper. She always has been.
Yeah.
So
where does she shop? Where didn't she shop?
Well, as I said, she loved Elsa's in Charleston. Uh-huh. There were a couple stores in Savannah. And then Beaufort actually had iterations of really good ladies' stores. It had Wallace and Danner, which is long gone. And then it had the House of Foxbow.
I love it.
And, oh, I mean, it was major stuff.
Foxbow, F-O-X-B-O-W.
Yeah, yeah, the House of Foxbow.
I was thinking B-O-U-G-H.
No, B-O-W. And it was in a really cool old house, Beaufort-style house, which, dear listeners, are these, you know, houses that are two stories, big porches on double layers to accommodate for the lack of air conditioning.
Right.
It was on the water and looked out on the water in Beaufort, and it was fabulous. Beautiful. And then after the House of Foxbow, there was Bay Fashions, which was also on a building that looked on the water.
Oh, I love it. And are they still there?
No, they're long gone. And then occasionally we would make the trek to Atlanta, which was just the Bataan Death March for children.
Right.
I mean, it's awful. It's awful. Terrible. Like, get in the car and drive for 5 hours so your mom can buy some clothes.
Yeah, it still is kind of awful.
Well, that's a lot to do. But so Atlanta every once in a while. And then she and her friends, like once in a blue moon, they'd be in New York and they'd go shop in New York. And then we logged a lot of hours on King Street in Charleston. And we logged a lot of hours in the covered part of Bob Ellis in front of their show windows.
Right.
We would take like Matchbox cars and stuff so we could play and mom would let us play like basically on the street, you know, just... I'll be with you in a minute. And then Mr. Kalinske needs to show me these shoes. You know?
Bob Ellis was just everything. I mean, it was just the most legendary, incredible store in the world. My grandmother shopped there. I mean, it was really, it was something.
Yeah, it's big doings.
Yeah.
And then people came from all over the country. We were in there years ago and somebody said, well, I've got to send these to the First Lady. And I don't remember who was in office at the time. But I mean, you know, the First Lady of the United States was getting shoes from Charleston, South Carolina.
And, you know, it started out as it was like a specialized shoe store. So it was for people that had really, really narrow feet or really, really small feet or really long feet or what, you know. And Southerners typically are known for having very small and narrow feet. And I don't know why that is.
I don't know why that is either.
I don't either, but we do. We must, you know, bind them or I don't know. but that's how they started. And then, you know, it just became the best shoe store in the world.
Yeah, well, we logged a lot of hours on the on the bluestone covered porch of Bob Ellis.
The terrazzo little,
Well, it was bluestone and slate, like the sidewalks in Charleston.
Right.
And we would literally sit there or we'd come inside and we'd be like, Mom, how much longer? I'll be with you when I'm with you, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
see, so, well, I can't believe I never met you there as a child.
We probably were there at the same time. So there and then.
And also they had the best service in the world. I have never seen service like that. I mean, that taught me everything I know.
And my mother, I don't remember.
They were like nurses, you know, like they were just on you.
Shoe
like,
triage.
It was shoe triage. It absolutely was.
But they would come with box after box after, I don't like this. Oh, I have them in this color. Well, I don't like this. That's too small.
Well, that was one of the things too, that you would say, I really like this. And you would show them one shoe that you liked and they came out with that, but also six other shoes.
Bilara, how many pairs of ribbon Ferragamo slippers does one woman need?
I needed them in every color. And
I mean, my mom.
And I would get them at the Junior League thrift shop.
I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, I hope my mother lives another 70 years, but I mean.
What size shoe is she? I would love
it. I have no clue. No clue. But so it was Bob Ellis and then Elsa's. And then there was a store. And then.
Was there Papagayo too in Charleston?
I don't know. I'm sure there was. And there was a Lily store, I think. And then we would go to Crawchecks for us. And then the boys department was upstairs where Caleb Davis held court. He would be like, oh, hey, the Kelly boys are here. Hey, George. Hey, Yancy.
And then did y'all get matching clothes?
No, that would have never have worked. No. And then when we wanted casual clothes, we got to go to M. Dumas, which is still in business. And Miss Dumas would be there, and she would say, "Cash, check, a charge," and with her cigarette dangling.
And would your mom charge?
She would charge it, and it
like a charge account.
Charge account. Yeah, and they would just send the bill to
house Buford. Account for sure. Yeah.
And then you could go there to get Levi's cords, and Duckhead, everything. Like Barber was not on the radar then, now I mean, if you need,
was it L.L. Bean or was it J. Crew, that jacket, the field jacket with
the barn jacket from L.L. Bean?
Oh, yeah. That was so good.
I never had one of those out.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I had one. I loved it.
Yeah. So anyway, but those, we spent a lot of time there. So my mother is a huge shopper, so we spent a lot of time. But her sisters are huge shoppers. My grandmother,
and she's one of
three girls.
Yeah.
And so my maternal grandmother, she was not a huge shopper, but she always liked to look good. And we spent a lot of time with them.
And she had this beautiful necklace that your eldest has.
So it's this gold watch. And the watch is long since broken, but she,
like a pocket watch.
It's
almost
like a pocket watch. It's the ladies' version of the men's pocket watch. That
She left it to her eldest granddaughter. Which is Margaret.
Yeah. So, and Margaret wears it. And so back to your earlier question about living in a house with girls and style, I had no clue. I mean, there are lots of discussions about clothes. There are lots of evenings with a laptop being shoved my way. Dad, do you like this? Dad, do you like this? Does this look good? And also one of the biggest problems is they know you and they've been to your stores and they've seen things here and they're like, "Do you think this looks like something Laura would sell? You know, this looks like it came from Capital." And I'm like, "Well, no, it's true. I mean, you know, it's a little disconcerting."
I have a lot of dads that don't like me.
and
husbands.
That would never be the case on our part. And you know, their mother is Mary Perrin has a definite sense of what she likes to wear and how she likes to look. Mm-hmm. And you know, she's generally beyond put together. You know, she's a snazzy dresser. Mm-hmm. I mean, she always looks good. Then her family are big shoppers. I mean, I don't know where all this comes from. So
it comes from it comes from Charleston. She's from Charleston. Charleston is a real retail city. I mean, that was it was an exciting place to shop, probably for the last 200 years.
Well, and
they're merchants. I mean, it was a city of merchants.
And a city of, it was the market town for basically what were farms all around the Lowcountry.
Exactly.
And it was a city that did well. And when people start making a little money, they want to look a little better.
Well, and Capital is named after the market town in Fayetteville, which was the market town in Eastern North Carolina that everybody all over Eastern North Carolina would come and shop at the Capital. It was called The Capital.
The Capital in Fayetteville.
Yeah, in Fayetteville, and it was on Market Street, but it was really something in its day.
Yeah,
and it went out of business in the 80s or so, but it was there for probably 75 years.
Well, and so people in Buford still, I mean, growing up, it's how you go into town, it meant, are you going to Charleston?
Right.
You know, and one of my favorite stories is a good friend of mine. We have another friend, and this good friend of mine is from Buford. He now lives in Charleston too, but there's always been sort of a lot of cross-pollinization between Buford and Charleston. They're 70 miles away.
Right.
Lots of families have, cousins in both places.
Right.
So my friend John was visiting one of his friends, and this friend's mother is from the metropolis of Tarboro, North Carolina.
I know Tarboro.
Yeah, I know. But this lady said, "And John, how do you find the city?" Meaning, what do you think of being in the big city? And he looked at her and said, "Well, Miss So-and-so, aren't you from Tarboro?" And she's like, "Be quiet, boy." So there's always, Charleston, we always thought it was a big deal when
it
we were little too. I mean, I tell the story when we would go to Jack Krawcheck's, we were made to dress up.
Oh,
we
yeah.
couldn't show up in the aforementioned camper shorts and
a
t-shirt. You had to put on a button-down shirt.
Camp shirt.
No, not a camp shirt. An Oxford cloth button-down shirt.
Khakis.
And khaki pants.
Duckheads.
Either Duckheads or the Jack Krawcheck store brand, B-E-R-L-E, Burl was the maker of them.
Uh-huh.
I think they're still in business. This is the company that makes Nantucket Reds, which are actually made in Charleston, which is funny. Everybody
really?
Thinks they're from Nantucket.
And then probably you wore
Basswegians.
Yeah, Basswegians.
That's
Weegians.
What we wore.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this the other day. Something came up about shoes. Somebody said something about men's shoes. And I was like, well, the only men's shoes we all wore were running shoes.
Right. New Balance.
Bleachers. Or Nike. Or Nike.
Zips.
Bean boots. Zips. Zips were the best. So what's my first fashion memory? Zips.
Zips, for sure, yeah.
Zips were the first
thing you really wanted.
The first aspirational piece of clothing I ever wanted were zips. So I could stand in the playground of the Blythewood Kindergarten in Buford and make the Z. Do you remember the
Z? Yeah.
It's hard to
zips the big Z.
So you took both feet and did basically parallel lines.
Yes.
And then you took your right foot and made a diagonal line from the top of one to another to make the Z. It was on
the
commercial.
The big Z.
Zips the big Z. And I mean, I begged for zips. Begged for
Did
zips.
Did you get them?
Yes, because the other place we shopped in before, which was now this place was amazing. It was called Lipsitz, and Lipsitz, Lipsitz Department Store, and that's where we were fitted for shoes
on King Street.
No, this was in Beaufort.
Oh.
The Lipsitz family had come over from either Lithuania or Latvia No, they weren't shoemakers. I mean, like, this is the story of so many Jewish families that fled persecution in Russia under the Tsar. They fled and they came to the South and they were peddlers, truly like with the sack on their back peddling. And Max Lipsitz landed in Beaufort and opened a store, and it was in existence until maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe 10 years ago. But
the children didn't want to take it over.
No, the children had taken it over.
The grandchildren.
The grandchildren and the great-grandchildren had taken it over. But Beaufort's economy has completely changed.
Yeah.
They're tourists galore. And so they could get more money renting it or selling the building than they could operating the department store. But that's why Jack Kochek's is no longer in existence in Charleston.
Bob Ellis. And
Elza's and Bob Ellis. You can get more.
Yeah. Selling the building.
Selling
that's
the building.
Unbelievable.
But Lipsitz was great. If you needed pajamas, when my youngest brother had surgery one time, and he had it was on his head or on his ear.
Uh-huh.
And so he couldn't wear pajamas that went over his head.
Okay.
So mom called Mr. Lipsitz and said, "Do you have any pajamas that just button down the front?" And he said, "Oh, I'm sure I got some in a drawer." So we went, went down to Lipsitz, and he pulled open a drawer, and they had these huge golden oak wooden cabinets that they kept things in. And I mean, what happened to those? I don't know. I wish I had been able to
buy them.
So he pulled open. He knew exactly where. He pulled open a drawer. And it said $1.25, and they were from like the 60s.
Wow.
And so mom said, "Mr. Lipsitz," but she called him Josie. She's like, "Josie, what? I mean, how much do I owe you?" And she said, "Well, it's $1.25. He said, "But it's, they can't." He said,
20 years later.
20 years later, he charged her $1.25.
I love it.
And they buttoned, and he wore them, while he was recuperating
were they cotton
from this.
Or flannel?
Yeah, they
or
were cotton. They had shorts. I mean, I kind of wear the similar ones from Brooks Brothers today.
My dad does too.
Yeah, yeah. The best thing about Lipsitz was it had a minor bird named Lippy. It was a minor bird, and you would go in and talk to Lippy while you were waiting your turn to be fitted for your shoes.
Really?
Uh-huh. And then after you got to talk to Lippy, and then Miss Rabinowitz, who is Mr. Lipsitz's sister, she had long, skinny, bony fingers, but she would tie the tightest knots in your shoes. And you would, of course, wear them out of the store. But we'd get home and you'd have to undo them because the knots.
And you couldn't get it
out. We were killing your circulation. But so as you went through your Golden Goose egg, do you remember Golden Goose shoes?
Yes.
Was that a thing here in Charlotte?
No, was it Golden Goose?
It was Golden Goose eggs. And
really?
You, Golden Goose shoes. And you
the
got
original, like before the Italian version now.
Oh, yeah, those,
those are
rather pricey shoes. Yeah. They were Golden Goose shoes, and you got a plastic golden egg.
Yes.
It was like a Cracker Jack box.
I definitely remember that.
And it was filled with, like, trinkets and toys.
Yes.
So you'd have to, while you were going through your Golden Goose when you got home, your mom or dad had to undo the Miss Ethel, as we called her, Miss Ethel Rabinowitz's knots in your shoes because they were cutting off the circulation.
Oh, my God, I love it.
You would have loved her. She was a very fixie lady. I mean, but there she was on her knees,
I love a fixie lady. What's a fixie lady?
So fixie is a term. Maybe that's just a term my family uses. But I mean, people, ladies who are fixie have their makeup done and they have their hair done and they're, wearing their matching sweater sets and their suits.
Am I fixie? No.
No, because
I'm not.
You still are imbued.
I'm still a bitch in boys' clothes.
No, I would never say that. You're still imbued with the same preppy sensibility with a little deadhead thrown in.
A lot of deadhead
from a few years we spent together on a hill in Massachusetts.
I love it.
I mean, but I mean, that did sort of play into the
style
choices that I still make today and that you probably still make. Well, I know, you still
totally.
Make it.
Well, I mean, I think that every morning when I wake up, I have little bits of all of those parts of my life. Like I loved those beautiful babysitters I had. In the 70s and 80s, they all wore the blue suede clogs. So I love clogs because of my babysitters when I was little. Definitely the deadhead parts. All these little, all the parts of your life kind of, and for me, I'm so nostalgic. Like every day has one, a little bit of that, when I get dressed.
Well, for me, that not,
what
so,
is yours?
Not so much with that.
You have a little still, citadel. You
no,
little,
no, it's still pretty much the uniform. And like,
it's your high school deadhead.
It's preppy. And there, it's the more the preppy side of it is still there, but occasionally, so the only wild choice I get to make is like with a tie, you know, something crazy. Yeah. You know, and the tie will have a little something, sort of a wink and nod on it.
I love it.
You know, but nothing, I mean, nothing too outlandish because
you're not outlandish.
I'm outlandish in some respects. I mean, I'm bonkers crazy, as you well know, in some respects. But, you know, going to court, you don't want to be noticed. You're not the story.
Right.
It's your client. It's what the tale you're trying to get across to the judge or the jury.
It's sort of like going to a wedding. Like we were talking recently about a young lady's outfit at a wedding. It's like a Southern thing, I think. And I don't know if people in other parts of the country know that it's really not polite to wear something that stands out too much at somebody else's wedding.
You
want to
look good,
it's not
but
your
it's,
day.
It's the bride and groom's day.
Yeah, you just don't do that. Like, you never wear white to somebody else's wedding, obviously, but you don't wear something too noticeable.
It's not about you. Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, yeah, completely. That's something that's falling away rapidly as well. Another story.
Yes.
So this is a funny story about you and manners. Do you remember?
No. I don't remember my manners.
This is our, so Andover, we call the classes differently. When you're in the ninth grade, you're a junior. Uh-huh. 10th grade, you're a lower. 11th grade, you're an upper. And uh-huh. then a senior is still a senior.
Okay.
So it was our upper year. Mm-hmm. And it was the beginning of school. And we bought our books at this wonderful old bookstore called the Andover
Bookstore.
Yeah. And it was fabulous. It had creaky old wood floors. They had a fireplace. They always put out like store-bought Amway cookies. Had a pot of, a kettle of tea on.
Constant Comment
by Bigelow. I mean, I love that place. So to buy our books, we went upstairs and across
the charge account.
You charge it to your parents, and then you step down. Uh-huh. And the ladies who were so New England-y with their spectacles on chains and their sweaters literally on their shoulders.
Right. Yeah.
You would give them your class list. And you and I, we ended up there at the same time buying our books on the first day. Because you walked down the hill.
Right.
You got your schedule and walked down the hill and then trudged them back up the hill. I mean, no wonder we were all
hardcore,
no wonder we were all achingly thin. Because we walked everywhere and we were, you know, hoofing it. Up and down the hill. So we go upstairs and we were talking about something. You gave the lady your list and I was giving her my list. And the lady said something about an English class. And you said, yes, ma'am. And the lady turned. And she said, did you just say yes, ma'am, to me? And you said, well,
yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am, I did. And I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. She said, never stop that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she said, we never get that from the New England children.
Well, it's funny because my first memory probably at Andover actually is in the first week of school I was there. And I told a teacher, yes, sir. And he said the same. He said, what did you say? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, don't say that again.
Oh, he said,
don't say that again.
That's what the
rude.
Lady at the
bookstore said. Yeah, exactly.
Well,
and I was like, well, it's not rude where I'm from. And he said, well, don't say that again. So well, I guess I didn't listen to him.
I'm my very first Andover memory, since we're talking about that, since, you know, this has turned into a walk down memory lane instead of about clothing and stuff. We pulled up in the wood paneled station wagon with the South Carolina plates, and the dean of our cluster, which I've described, showed up and was welcoming us. And it was Henry Wilmer, who was from North Carolina.
Right.
And he jumped, and my mother asked him a question. He said, yes, ma'am, to her. And I said, okay, I'll be fine. So, I mean, he was one of the leaders of our school.
So confusing.
So that's, I mean, so, you know, you got to know your audience, right?
Yeah, you got to know your audience. But also, Southerners, again, like, they know who they are, I think. And I don't think we forget. I hope we don't.
No, and it took time for me to, I mean, I had to get out. I had to go.
Right,
couldn't be here. I was much too cool, much too smart. Got to spread my wings. But it was only in leaving that I got to appreciate what we had.
Absolutely. Hamlin, we ask everybody on this podcast one question. What did you wear to the prom?
Oh, well, that's easy. It was.
And what did your date wear? Do you remember that?
Yes. She wore Laura Ashley.
I wore Laura Ashley, too.
Everyone wore Laura Ashley. Nobody at the prom we attended. I actually went our upper year and our senior year.
Same here.
Yeah, because we were so cool. Oh, if you got invited as an upper, you,
I think I went as a lower too.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. golly, Pete, the girls at, in the late 80s that went to Andover did not wear ball dresses. Y'all weren't in prom dresses. Y'all were like in cocktail dresses,
right.
And like lots of Laura Ashley. So
yeah, there was not a sequin or.
So I don't remember. I know who I went with both years. Upper year, it was someone wore a Laura Ashley cocktail dress, uh-huh. like with prints and flowers.
Okay.
And then senior year, it was almost the same dress, but with the colors were just a little
That's
different.
That's hilarious.
And what I wore was a tuxedo both years that we everyone stood in line in the entry hall to Commons and got fitted in the entry hall from a tuxedo rental place in Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Really?
Yeah, in Lawrence.
I wish
just over
the
river.
Yeah.
No, the Andover shop did not rent tuxedos.
Right.
You could buy a tuxedo.
Them, yeah. When did you buy your first tuxedo, by the way?
Freshman year of college.
Yeah, and you still wear it? It still fits?
No, that one doesn't. That one doesn't. That one I outgrew. And then I bought another. I'm on my third.
I bet it would fit you now. I bet it's too big.
No, but then I had to buy another one. And then I undergrew that one, luckily, and just bought another one like in the last year and a half.
I love it.
But yeah, a tuxedo with a simple.
Are you a shawl collar guy?
I think those were notch collars in high school.
Uh-huh.
My first one was a shawl collar, second one was shawl collar, and now I'm back to the notch.
Notched.
Yeah, so what I wore to prom was the tuxedo. And I do remember, this is funny, because Rob Vermillon, who was one of our classmates, looked at me and said, "You know how to do cufflinks, don't you?" And I said, "Of course, I knew how to do cufflinks." He goes, "You know, I'm going to have to show half my dorm how to do cufflinks." And it was, and Rob is, you know, still one of our great friends. But
right.
It was just funny because he was like, Hamlin.
You seem like the kind of guy
who knew how to do a cuffling. And my dad had shown me for years, like, this, come here, boys, this is the way you put your cuffs on. This is what you
by
do.
Yourself.
Yeah, by yourself because.
Yeah.
None of us are.
Your date wasn't at your room getting ready.
Well, that, and, you know, the days of taking a manservant to school with you were long gone. You know, and my valet didn't accompany me to Oxford,
right.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Thank you, Hamlin.
Thanks, Laura.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.